is the weekly show all about weather. Weather Brains, episode number 362 for New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2012. And I guess we should actually disclose in that this is a very transparent show. We're recording this not on New Year's Eve, but on New Year's Eve. Actually on Sunday, December 30th, so that our assorted panelists can have the evening off and go celebrate the new year in any way, shape, fashion, or form they would like to do. So let me just start with J.B. Elliott, the world's greatest weatherman. J.B., what are you going to do to celebrate the arrival of 2013?
Probably catch up on some reading and do some housework and clean up my office and redesign my office and eat.
That might be the most unique answer of the whole group right there. So you're not going to be out in Times Square watching the big ball drop tomorrow night?
No, sir. Will
you even stay up until midnight to watch it? That's the question.
Yeah, I'll watch it on Smell-O-Vision.
Okay, well, I got you. Well, JB, for those that don't know, is one of our regulars, and it's great to have JB on the show with us this week. JB worked for the National Weather Service for 32 years before joining the private sector, going over to the dark side. And since we really have not had a chance to talk, JB, since in a while, how was Christmas at the Elliott household? What did Santa Claus bring you?
Santa Claus brought me two very, very nice books that was ordered from National Geographic. They weighed about 5 pounds apiece. One of them was Everything You Needed to Know About World War II. It is an awesome book with lots of pictures and everything. And the second book was the Footprints of Jesus, everywhere that Jesus went in biblical lands and all the places he went and everything that happened back then.
That's awesome. So the big question is, did you get any socks and underwear?
Not yet.
So that's what excites me. No, in my old age, I love getting socks and underwear. I mean, who doesn't need socks and underwear? Kevin Selly, do you need socks and underwear?
Well, we don't need a title anymore, that's for sure.
by the way, we should point out for those that are listening, since we're doing this on a Sunday night, it's a little different in that a lot of us that are typically at work are at home. I would be involved in that, and you are involved in that. You are home tonight, so you are in your study/studio, I see.
Yes, and we're all dressed more casually, although I typically will wear just a baseball hat and a Henley shirt on the air as well. No, I'm only kidding.
Remember, I've got 66 shirts, but they weren't just this Christmas.
No, I understand. And by the way, since so many of us are at home, you will also hear a variety of noises tonight, including children, dogs barking, no telling cats. I've got two teenagers down the hall playing Xbox, so it's going to be an interesting night. Kevin, you got the sniffles? You sound like you're a little nasally this evening.
I'm finally on the backside of a terrible head cold. I had it all last week, started sneaking up on me probably I guess Christmas Day, and it has knocked me down big time. So I'm thankful. I said this at dinner. I never thought I would sit and be thankful to have only a stuffy nose, and that's what I'm down to now. And so I'm thankful to be on the mend. And happy New Year.
Yeah, happy New Year.
And I got a bone to pick with you guys. You
know, go ahead.
I wasn't here last week, you know, but I sent some audio, and y'all played the audio, and I listened to the program, and after the thing that I sent, here comes Peters stealing my photos. What's up with this? He's broadcasting these things to the world, and what? I mean, there's no Creative Commons license on that thing. There's attribution, but he didn't ask me. All of a sudden, I just hear he's using my pictures. What's up
with
that?
That was his Christmas card, his Christmas wish, your photos. So send him an invoice, and we'll see if he ever pays up. I will say that piece of audio you sent in last week was probably the greatest piece of audio that your family's ever seen. It was good.
Oh, wow. Good.
I mean, you sent some pretty funny stuff. That was pretty funny stuff. In fact, let me just do this.
You should play it again.
Yeah, maybe somebody didn't hear it, so this is what Kevin sent in from last week.
Hello, friends. At this joyous time of year, I wanted to bring you a special holiday greeting from my family to yours. The 12 Days of Weather Brains.
12
foghorn sounding.
11 weather stations.
10 Google Hangouts.
9 superstorms.
8 rim shots banging.
7 global warming.
6 Coco Ross.
5 social networks.
4 named winter storms.
3 email surveys.
2 hygrometers.
And Dad's out.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
That was awesome. I mean,
it sure was.
You really outdid yourself on that. So congratulations to the Sellers household.
The shameful thing, though, is that you roped your family into that. I mean, it's bad enough that we've sucked you in for an hour and a half a week, but to rope your kid in? Come on.
My wife hates doing those things. She's a trooper. It makes me wonder, though, you know, if I promised to do one of those per week, could I not show up for the program? Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Now, wait a minute. You tried to leave, and you left, and then you came back. So you have no one to blame but yourself.
No, that's a good point.
It's all your fault, pal.
I get it.
Nate Johnson is also home tonight. It looks like we're all in these nice home settings. Of course, Nate typically is home, but you are home on a Sunday night. So thank you for joining us. What's happening in the Johnson household?
Well, my wife and daughter are in the other room eating Texas-shaped waffles. That's the dinner of choice for tonight.
What?
And yes.
Texas-shaped waffles?
Well, when you have family from Texas, occasionally you will get a Texas waffle iron for Christmas.
Wow.
And so we got one last year and Jana decided she wanted to make some Texas-shaped waffles, not Texas-sized waffles. There is a difference. It's nice because the grid marks on the waffle iron line up so that you can find her hometown just by intersecting the right two lines, which is sort of a nice touch.
I think you need to go get that and let us see that thing at some point.
I might do that before the show is out. I want to let it cool down first because last time I saw it still had waffle in it. It was kind of hot.
Go at some point when James is talking because he won't say anything important.
Oh, boy. We are in rare form here tonight. And we got Bill Murray. Bill is not on the road for the first time in weeks. Welcome home.
Yeah, James, it was kind of surprising to see. I hadn't done a This Week in Weather History since October 22nd. It's been a horrible 2 months. I actually had to work for a change, you know. Well,
there hasn't been any weather in the last 2 months of historical note anyway, so, you know,
that's
all good.
Okay, good. Well, anyway, I'm glad to be here tonight and glad to be going to Miami next week for a little ball game. Looking forward to that.
So you're going to the Alabama-Notre Dame football game, huh? Who are you going to be pulling for there, Bill?
Well, you know, at the beginning of the season, I predicted Alabama to win. So we'll see if they can go ahead and follow through on my prediction. So
did you predict them to play Notre Dame in the national championship? Did you predict the matchup too?
No, I just said that Alabama would get back to the game, and they scared me against Texas A&M, and fortunately got things back on track and are in the game. So I don't know. You know, it's going to be a titanic tussle, and I'm hoping it doesn't rain like crazy. You know, next Monday night in Miami, because you got the two models, you know, like they typically are. They're pretty far apart right now, but the GFS looks pretty wet for next Monday night, but that's a long way away, so maybe it'll change between now and then.
All right, well, what we're going to do tonight, we really don't have any guests. We had planned on having Greg Carbon of the Storm Prediction Center with us. Greg typically comes on every year for the year ender, and we look back at the year. And since Greg was not able to join us tonight, we're just going to kind of do that ourselves and go back and take a look at the vast weather database of 2012. And Bill Murray, you're our weather historian. I'll let you kind of guide the discussion. We all have some thoughts on the year and maybe some ideas on what's to come in 2013. So, Bill, you take it and run with it.
Well, James, we'll kind of go around the table. Nate, I know you weighed in this afternoon. A lot of folks have been taking our survey, believe it or not. I don't know if James, if we can put it out to the world. We've got a little survey monkey over there with 17 events for them to rate. And Nate, I bet you're going to pick the one that's the leader in the clubhouse right now for number one in impact.
Well, I don't know that there's any doubt. I guess the question is Sandy not number one for anybody on the panel?
Yeah, good question, because it's not number one for some folks on the survey.
And I think they're wrong, but I'm certainly willing to listen. You know, it's that time of year, being charitable and all that.
So does anyone disagree with Nate's choice that Superstorm Sandy was the biggest event of 2012?
Hey, let me do a screen share here. I tried to do it on the regular browser, but apparently I cannot do that because I voted once on this thing. So I had to open up. I'm opening up Opera here.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I'm trying to find a browser that I'm not using, and it's Opera's.
Funny story about that. My wife works for a retail store, a little local joint here in Apex, the peak of good living. And she mentioned that somebody had applied for a job that they'd posted, and one of their skills was Microsoft Windows Opera. And she said, that's wrong, right? And I said, well, probably, but there actually was an Opera, you know, browser that was out there. And I said, the last time I had heard anybody use Opera was two jobs ago, when Opera, I think 9 or 10 came out.
They should apply at that Microsoft store that James was at in Lenox Mall in Atlanta Friday.
Well, I don't know. From the look of it, I don't think they need employees so much as they need customers.
There's some bodies in that place. Wow. All right. So I've got, for those that are watching the video side, I've got up the suggestions that Bill Murray has for the top events of 2012. And this is in no order. In fact, I guess it's in maybe alphabetical order here.
Yeah, I put it in there so it wouldn't be biased in any way.
Okay. So as we go around the horn, these are just some of the ones that we will be talking about. And Nate, you say Superstorm Sandy is number one on your list, right?
Yeah, I don't see how Sandy is not, you know, for the storm, for the impact, for the controversy. Oh, there's been so much controversy. I don't see how that one can't be number one. There may be some others that are pretty close. As I'm looking at the derecho, probably would have been a pretty big one. The drought in the central part of the country is huge, but just in terms of the integrated impact across a large number of people, I got to say Sandy's my number one.
I'll lift up just, you know, for the sake of argument, but I agree with Nate, is overall the heat through the year. It was such a warm winter. It was such a warm summer for so many people. And even early on, and so many records fell. I don't know, was it a record number of records? Do we have those kinds of records, Bill?
Yeah, I think, you know, I saw a figure that for March there were 8,000 daily record highs and 7,000 daily record minimum highs or warm minimums, which, you know, that boggles your mind. Plus a lot of, you know, all-time records for a lot of stations.
I looked at something that I think it was Stu Ostro put up. I think it was on Google Plus. He had the top 20 or something weather images, and it was interesting because, you know, your first thought when you hear something like that is, okay, well, it's a picture of a boat, you know, sitting on top of the dock after Sandy or whatever it was, but it was mostly meteorological images. There were a ton of water vapor images that were just cool, but one of them I think had record highs in the month of March, and you can search for Stu Ostro's page on Google Plus and find that. But really some neat stuff that was out of the ordinary, too. It wasn't tornado pictures, like I said, or hurricane pictures, but just the magnitude of the heat, I think, has probably got to make that pretty close second when you think about the number of people impacted and the long-term effects when you think about crops and things like that. So just for the sake of argument, I'll throw that one in.
Yeah, you know, we were in the Midwest in July, and the impact was just unbelievable to crops and to, you know, water supplies and things. It was a horrible situation. A lot of all-time records. You know, Colorado Springs, only the fifth time that they had ever recorded 100-degree temperature. You know, Chicago had 8 days in the month of March with with 80 degrees or higher. And, you know, Greg sent his notes over and he said, you know, that 25 states had, you know, average record warmest temperatures in January, February, and March. And the whole country was 6 degrees above normal for that 3-month period.
Wow.
You know, not everybody was, you know, warm the entire time. Obviously, it takes a, you know, a high amplitude pattern to make something like that happen.
Let's not forget Isaac. He made several round trips.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Isaac will definitely show up, JB. And you've got another great one, too, in a minute, JB. But, you know, when we were planning our spring break, we were planning on going to Flagstaff, Arizona, to the Grand Canyon, to spring break in Phoenix. And, you know, about 10 days out, we looked at the models and saw what was going to happen and changed our plans to go to Washington, D.C. because it was, you know, it was in the 80s to near 90 in Washington. And, you know, it was one of the earliest cherry blossom blooms ever. And it was just, you know, beautiful weather. But Flagstaff picked up 14 inches of snow during the same period of time.
So, all right. So JB, what do you think the top story was? The top weather story of 2012? You're the world's greatest weatherman, the senior guy on the staff here. What do you say?
I'm the world's poorest weatherman, but I definitely will choose Sandy.
For what reason?
Because he caused so much devastation, and he caused the mayor of New York City plus Al Gore to say that it was all due to global warming.
A little slow on the trigger there, James.
Yeah, really? Well, I was just doing some other work, and I'll give a long one here. There.
That loosened my earwax.
You need the earwax, Mike. I think if I see that commercial one more time, JB, I'm going to throw up.
That's the title right there.
Yeah. So you know, here's the, you know, I think I agree because of all the ruckus that went with it. In fact, tell you what, let me kill that screen share here. You know, we had the big ruckus about the, you know, assessment team after this thing. And then you had the political ruckus that JB talked about and all this other stuff. So I think in terms of buzz and, you know, people talking about it, that has to be number one. But you know, you guys got to, what was this thing? It was a Category 1 hurricane, right?
At landfall, if it was, well, at landfall, it wasn't even a hurricane, technically.
Right, it was a post-tropical
system. But at one time, the officials
system.
In the Northeast.
Yes.
At one time, the officials in the Northeast, the mayors and governors, demanded that Congress get involved and get this stuff cleaned up. But Congress was too busy doing you know what.
Yeah.
Nothing.
We're going to make JB our political officer on the show here. If you want to send the hate mail, it's JB@JB.com. So there.
He's been watching the Fox News channel a lot.
I would love to have it.
Yeah.
I'd pay money for that.
Well, JB raised Isaac, and I think it's amazing that the Mississippi River ran backwards, you know, past New Orleans.
That's pretty cool.
And I thought that was amazing. And then, you know, of course, all the levee breaks and things they had. But mm-hmm. I think Isaac may turn out to be the deepest in terms of central pressure tropical storm ever observed. Do y'all remember that as being a fact during that storm?
And so many people in New Orleans were stranded on top of the levee, just trying to wait for the water to go down before they could even be rescued. And a lot of them had to stay up there 2 or 3 days. And they even were going to punch a hole through the main levee from the lower parish in Louisiana to let it drain into the Gulf of Mexico as quick as possible.
Yeah, that was a crazy storm.
All that had to be rebuilt.
Now, JB, you had another interesting thing you wanted to bring up from this year that didn't make the list in advance. I thought that was a great addition that you had.
Yes, it is. And I'm going to get in trouble. My middle name is
boy.
Trouble.
Do I need to start...
It has nothing to do with global stuff, but I don't know how to start if I can't.
Oh, go ahead, JB. We'll put a anyway, we'll hold it. We got a hold. To go ahead.
Okay. For the last several days, I have spent an excess number of hours, watching a certain channel on Smell-O-Vision that is known as the Weather Channel. And last night, it was so cold here, I made me a pot of coffee at midnight and sat down, and I was going to be determined to watch the Weather Channel until 4 a.m. And I wanted to see what the temperatures above us were doing and how much the wind was dying down and so forth. And I posted a couple of posts on the Facebook. But I sat there for over an hour and a half before the local on the 8s came up because they were doing storm stories. And the most unique one they were doing last night is they were doing ice curb iceberg destruction, and they had a whole group of about three or five or seven men out in the Atlantic with rifles or some kind of guns shooting the icebergs, trying to chip them off and get them to start melting and moving. And so
Let me get this straight. So you got guys that are with rifles that are shooting at icebergs, trying to make them break away?
Yeah, they were shooting the fronts of the icebergs, knocking off big chips of ice, and then they would do high fives with each other and laugh, and I cried.
I need to watch the Weather Channel more. Wow.
Let me tell you something else, too. You're in a roll, JB.
Go for it.
They are naming winter storms.
Yes.
So I'm going to start naming droughts like Danny Boy Drought.
JB, do you think that naming winter storms is a good idea as a guy that's worked in this business since the 50s?
No, I do not. I can't remember the names more than 30 minutes, but I did remember those two. And I'm also going to name Drizzle, like Don Drizzle.
JB's on a roll. I think he got pumped up on caffeine before this show. This is great.
And rainstorms. Yeah, rainstorms too.
So you're saying that naming winter storms should be in the top 10 weather stories of 2012?
Yes, and then I hope everybody will forget it.
Yes,
I agree.
I'm just waiting for them to announce this is the record breaking, fifth named storm of the year.
Did you guys see this? All right, so there's a station in Connecticut that's naming the storms themselves. So, we had this deal, over the past few days where the Weather Channel called it something, in this station in Connecticut called it Brian. Did y'all see that?
What's the deal?
Is that just a one station deal, or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, they've been doing it for years on their own, and there's another station somewhere.
The Green Bay, I think.
Yeah, that has done it for a number of years as well. And in that market, you've got the same storm with two different names. But I agree with JB. I think that is a benchmark moment this year, and a highlight this year, or a low light this year in weather coverage. And I think it marks a real turning point in the Weather Channel's evolution. We can go back and forth whether it's a good one or a bad one, but I think it's a really important one to take note of, and I would easily put that, I think, in the top five.
If you go back and look at the... You click on a hashtag. I mean, one of the reasons that they gave for doing this was making it easy to share and talk about this on Facebook and Twitter and everything. Well, you go and you search on one of the storm name hashtags, and I will not use them here. But you go and search for one of those, and more than half of the things that come up are people ridiculing the names, ridiculing the idea of naming them, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. I can't. And the buzz has not been. I mean, they've not been picked up by nearly anybody else. I mean, there have been a couple of outlets that have rolled with it. But for the most part, even NBC hasn't really gone there. I gotta imagine that they look back at this at the end of the year and they go, maybe this idea is before its time. That's the way it's going to be pitched. That sort of like at the end of Back to the Future when he finishes singing Johnny Be Good and he's prancing around with a guitar and everything, and at the end everybody's just staring at him and he says, maybe you guys aren't ready for this yet.
Are
gonna love it. I think we have that moment, and I wrote at the time, and I believe this, I think there's some merit to the idea. I don't think it's completely without merit, but I think the unilateral movement of that, and I'm going to throw in the local stations that do it too, although they didn't make nearly as big a deal out of it, but I got to think that at the end of this, they're going to look back and go, this is a bad idea. Maybe we should have worked with the AMS. Maybe we should have worked with the Weather Service instead of giving them less than 24 hours notice they were going to do it. Let's have a conversation. Let's figure out how to do it well. Let's figure out if naming them make sense at all from a social science perspective. And then if it does, then find a way that we can all do it and all be consistent with it, as opposed to having our hands forced by the 800-pound gorilla in the room that, you know, we all just love having our hands forced by the 800-pound gorilla. I mean, you know, it's top of my list of things to do.
Well, hey, refresh my memory. What do these names mean here? I mean,
the idea was, and this sort of rubs me partly the wrong way. One of the reasons that they picked the names they picked was they wanted to have names with attitude. And so, yeah, well, but you look at Rocky and Zeus and Draco and, you know, whatnot.
Yeah, and clearly the point
of that was we want to make them catchy. We want to make them, you know, winter storms are sort of fun and, you know, they get your bread nice and you get a couple of days off work and whatnot. Never minding the fact that these things kill people. They kill people. And yeah, that's really high on my list of things to make fun of. I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
I sent them a note today suggesting that they name the next hurricane Span.
Oh, please.
I can't wait till we get to Xerxes. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
I like everything Nate had to say, but my prediction is that they won't do what he said. And the reason is that this was first and foremost a marketing stunt.
And I got two more little things I wanted to mention, then I will shut up for the rest of the evening.
Go ahead, JB.
On the National News Channel.
This is great. JB's all pumped up on caffeine. This is good. Go ahead. We're just going to let JB do the whole show. Go, man.
I haven't been on Weather Brands for about 6 weeks, so I got it built up. It's just spilling over. I was watching the national news channels like the Fox and MSNBC and CNN, and their holiday meteorologists are not the main ones, not the chief ones. They're usually young ladies. And I have watched all day on the Fox News channel when they do weather about every 20 minutes, and the female lady woman meteorologist would come on there and stand right in front of the map, and I couldn't see anything except.
Be careful now.
I'm not going to say anything bad. I don't use bad language. I couldn't see anything but Raleigh and El Paso.
Well, that's all you need to see. I mean, as long as Raleigh's on the map, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Just don't
call it Raleigh.
Let's get back to the subject at hand here. We're trying to get a discussion on the top weather events or maybe the weather news of 2012. And I think a lot of us maybe can agree naming winter storms by the Weather Channel maybe could be in that list of weather stories. It's not a weather event. It's more of a weather story. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's kind of focusing on Sandy. And again, Sandy, for me, that was a Category 1 hurricane. I mean, what happens if a Category 3 or 4 goes up in there? I mean, you know, it affected, though, this corridor with extremely, extremely dense population, of course. And that's the big story. It's happened before. It's going to happen again. But I do agree, just because of the impact on humanity, it should be up there at the top. And I think that, you know, the drought and the heat, the wildfires, Bill, is that all lumped together? Is kind of one story there?
Yeah, kind of one big story, James. You're right, because there were big wildfires in Colorado and big wildfires in Oklahoma that, you know, were really scary on top
one
of
one in
drought.
Arizona, too, early in the year.
And then, yeah, that's right, JP, and some in Reno, even in January. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the second rated event right now we haven't even mentioned. Can anybody guess what it is?
Now, when you say second rated, is this rated by
survey.
Who? Oh,
I don't know. Like 20 results on our survey so far, and clearly the second place event we haven't even talked about.
Not the derecho?
Well, Nate mentioned that one, and it's scoring pretty well, but probably about fifth or sixth. But the March 2nd tornado outbreak that killed 40 people, 68 tornadoes, is coming in right now as the second most important story.
Yeah. Wow.
That was clearly a storm with attitude. They should have named that one, too.
Yeah, that one deserved a name for sure. And it didn't get much of a name, Nate, just the March 2nd tornado outbreak.
And that's fine with me.
Yeah, James, you were fussing about something.
I was just going to say, how are you seeing the results? Because when I go to that survey thing, it won't let me do anything. It just says you've already voted.
Yeah, you want me to pull it up on my screen so we can share it?
No. Let's, because people, we want to let them vote and see what they actually think.
Yeah, there you
okay,
go.
There you go.
Sharing the results.
Yeah, right now you've got a good, 60% of them have it in the top three right now, which I think that makes sense because that probably was the most deadly event of the year, at least from a tornado standpoint.
And on the flip side of that, and sometimes it's hard to talk about negatives, but the relative drought of tornadoes that we've had, and since Greg isn't here, I'm going to borrow a graph that he created on the SPC site, but this is the running count of tornadoes over the last few years. The heavy black line that's running near the bottom that just barely crossed over 1,000 is this year. The red line, second from the top, was last year. And so, not only did we have a relative minimum in the number of tornadoes, at least by recent numbers, but compared to last year, you look at these 2 years and they're going to average out about average, which is, not at all indicative of how bad last year was. That's the gray line right above the white line there in the middle that just barely crosses 1,500 right now. So far, I think 1,114. I'm not sure if that includes Christmas Day or not.
And of course, this kind of goes hand in hand with the heat bubble, the same setup that produced the hot, dry weather shunted the westerlies north of the, Tornado Alley,
right.
and they didn't get much. I mean, it was amazingly quiet out there. And the storm chaser guys had like nothing to do.
Yeah, the people that spent their vacation, chasing, they had a horrible time. But Greg sent a slide over that showed in central Kansas between May 1st and June 30th, they were down 43 tornadoes on average in central Kansas for that two-month period.
That statement, I love that statement because it's so indicative of this group that we're talking to. Those people that were chasing had a horrible time. Nothing happened.
Well, they paid a lot of money to go out there in the middle of May and June.
So let me ask you this, all right? So these guys that sell the tornado tours, go out with our chase team. Do they get a discount if there's no weather? I mean, how does that work?
Generally not, in my understanding.
Yeah, they get an extra burrito at the end of the day or something.
Yeah. They figure you're getting education and, it's a chance to meet other people and to drive around and see some of the countryside and some inexpensive motels and things like that. So I think that they include that as part of the experience. But I've never heard of that.
I guess they make it clear in the terms when you sign up for this thing.
We've had chasers.
I love your lower third.
You know what, though? That makes me think of maybe a subheading. How about the top? And this is based maybe also somewhat on what Stu put on the Google Plus. How about the best weather images? Anybody have some suggestions on those for the year? Mine locally would be because it's on your list, Bill, is the Dallas-Fort Worth tornadoes. But as far as images would be the helicopter video of those tractor trailers.
Yes.
Yeah, so I would.
You would know about that.
Yeah.
are you the person that voted for that number one, Kevin, on the table?
But I would love to hear some. I also put up an image on the Digital Meteorologist blog of a house in New Jersey that it's just half a house, but it is split on the diagonal. I'll try and call it up here in a minute. It's half the house. It's a two-story house, but you're missing the western and southwestern parts of it, and the rest of it is kind of standing there just looking like it's ready to topple over. And there are millions of images from that storm, but that one to me, just because of the balance of it, is iconic for the randomness and the power of that storm. So those would be my two images that stick in my mind. Anybody else?
And those super dust storms in Phoenix early in the year.
Oh, yeah.
It caused numerous pileups.
JB, you're our haboob expert, aren't you?
I was on a haboob once.
Another show title.
It didn't involve an orangutan, did it?
Wow. I was in a mobile home, and I thought the mobile home was going to overturn. I had to run and jump in it because that big cloud of dust was coming. And then another time, I was driving between someplace in Clowns Corners, New Mexico, and in my brand new Dodge Dart, and one of those vicious.
Yeah,
dust,
buddy.
That's a babe mobile right there.
Yeah, especially with JB behind the wheel, man. That's good stuff.
One of those vicious dust storms caught up with it, and we stopped and got in a motel. And the next morning, when we got up, we tried to go out the door to go get some breakfast, and we couldn't get the door open. And we looked out the window, and tumbleweed was all the way up to the top of the front door. We couldn't get out. So we called the front office and told them we needed to move some tumbleweed so we could get out. And so when they let us out, my car was covered up with tumbleweed. I couldn't even find it.
JB's story is getting better and better and better every time. That's great.
Absolutely the truth.
All right. If you say it, I believe it, JB. Kevin has an image, I think, one of the better weather images of the year. Kev, what you got?
No, I'm not showing any images. This is an audio podcast.
Oh, well, describe what you might believe to be one of the top images of 2012.
It's the one I mentioned a while back. It's that house from Sandy. You can find it at digitalmeteorologist.com. And I just put up a post before we started. WordPress sent me a note. They did some stats on that blog. And so I made that public and put it up there. And Nate Johnson was doing some work here in the last couple of months of this year on the Digital Meteorologist blog, generating a lot of traffic, a lot of it around the Hurricane Sandy assessment. But he's done some good work there, and I hope we'll continue to do so in 2013.
All right. Well, let me throw this out. You know, this is one that just happened within the last week. How about the Christmas Day tornado outbreak? What do you guys think about the impact of that? Yeah. That was kind of a big deal. And, you know, the city of Mobile, Alabama, had two tornadoes tracking across the city within, 5 days. And we, you know, it was kind of strange. I was scheduled to be off all week. And, of course, we know what happens sometimes when you're in this business, you have severe weather and you just have to blow off your vacation and come in. So I worked all Christmas Day and Christmas night, that severe weather outbreak. And, I think, what was the total count? Over 30 tornadoes in the region from that?
I think I heard 26, James, but it may have grown a little bit since I kept up with that total. But it was an impressive day, and I don't think we've ever had a tornado since records have been kept in Alabama on Christmas Day. And of course we had 15, I think.
One of the national news networks did mention that we had 30 in Alabama. They may have been in error.
I don't think we had 30 in Alabama. I think we had about 17 in our state. But again, pretty remarkable.
Did anyone tell Diane?
Now that, she was off that day.
That, by the way, and you know, that's another. You know, it's not a weather event, but that happened this year.
It was right
in the very beginning of the year, back in January. We had a tornado outbreak on January 23rd, which affected parts of the Gulf Coast states, and we were involved in that in our market. And it was a rough night. We had significant tornadoes, and unfortunately, two people died during the pre-dawn hours. And one of those that died was a precious 16-year-old girl that lived in a suburb northeast of Birmingham. And, you know, I stayed up all night. You know, in fact, I was at the AMS convention in New Orleans and came back early to work that. And I thought the weather service in Birmingham did a tremendous job with their warnings. The average lead time was about 30 minutes. And you know, I'd been up all night, and I mean, I didn't even take a nap that day, and was on TV on the regular hours at 4 and 5. And at 5:30, we had this little 30-minute break where we take ABC News. And I just happened to walk in my little room, and I heard Diane Sawyer on ABC's World News Tonight. You know, she had that look on her face like she has gas, and you know, she said, rare tornadoes strike Alabama with no warning.
No.
And normally I let it go in one ear and out the other ear. In her defense, she doesn't understand this. She doesn't understand the culture of severe weather. She doesn't understand what happens in mid-America. She is a New Yorker. You know, it would be like me going to critique the you know, a Broadway play. I don't do that. But for some reason, I just was offended. And what she did, she really belittled the process. And I thought, all right, I've had enough of these bullies, you know, in New York or Los Angeles, wherever they are, that come in here and just make this stuff up. They're talking about things they don't understand and they're wrong. So I just decided, all right, well, I got a voice. Let me just challenge her to a debate. Now, I was doing it for the Weather Service people and the EM people, all these people involved in the process that don't have a voice. And so I said, let's just have a debate. You know, I'll come on your show. You come on mine. You say there was no warning. I say there was a warning. And before you know it, it got into a Twitter funk, you know, within about 12 hours. And the next day, the ABC News president called our general manager asking us to call off the dogs. They defended me. They said, no, our guy's right. But to their credit, they came back the next night, did a story on how good the warnings were and how the warning process worked. And they talked about, you know, weather radios and smartphone apps and all the things that they should have done the first night, never admitting they're wrong. But
bothered me.
Yeah.
I thought that was three quarters of the job. I commend them for coming down. I think it was kind of despicable that they had to have a bunch of people yelling at them for them to do it and to correct themselves, but to not at least even make a whiff of a suggestion that said, you know what, we said this, it caused a firestorm, and we were wrong. I thought that was pretty cowardly.
I happen to be at AMS in New Orleans, the AMS American Meteorological Society's annual meeting, and to say that James, this whole thing was a topic of conversation there is a bit of an understatement. I happened to catch up with one of the PR folks from NOAA on the exhibit floor, and we had an interesting conversation about this. I won't go into detail, but it was amusing to say the least. And you know, it's one of these things that it's just become reflex. It hit right. without warning when it comes right. to this. I think we get it as a society, in certain segments of society, we just get into reflex about sorts of things, and it fits a narrative. I mean, it's a story that's easy to tell. We've told it 1,000 times before, and we're just going to re-rack that tape and tell it again, when in reality, the number of tornadoes that truly hit without any kind of warning is very small, less than 10%. And the number of people that are affected by tornadoes who don't get the warning through no fault of their own is very small as well. Now, I'm not going to say that there wasn't somebody who ignored, you know, just didn't watch the news the night before, went to bed that night and woke up the next morning with their house in shatters around them. I'm not going to say that doesn't happen, but the vast majority of people knew that was coming, or at least had the first idea that was there. So, yeah, this is good stuff.
The thing that disappoints me, I think, the most is that story the second day, I think this is editing history and the news, which is not right. The second story the second day would not have happened were it not for the big dust-up that James caused. But they ignored that in telling the story, and I think that is an omission of guilt, if that's a thing. So that's kind of what bothered me about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to tell that story and rely on people who, like I said, describe, they went to bed the night before, they didn't know it was coming, they woke up the next morning and their house is destroyed, and then they come out and go, it hit without warning. Well, if that's the story you're going to tell, then you need to go get the other side. And the other side was, well, they had plenty of opportunity to get warning.
Right.
They had, it was on television, the Weather Service, the Storm Prediction Center, the Weather Service were all over that event.
Yeah.
The local broadcast meteorologists were all over that event, and not just James, but all of them. And why that doesn't, you know, rise to the level of actually getting into the coverage anymore, I don't get it. I don't know if they don't want to come off as tooting their own horn, but at the end of the day, hey, you know.
All right.
Anyway,
by the way, JB was ordering pizza during that whole thing. Did you see that?
I mean, you can call me to order it for him, Jay.
JB, what'd you get on your pizza there? Pepperoni and mushrooms? What you got?
I also got some Vienna sausage juice on it.
There you go. That's the obvious
one. Right there. With a two liter of Buffalo Rock.
Yeah. I tell you, my friend in Detroit that urged me to quit eating Vienna sausage when I was up so much Christmas Day and Christmas night, he sent me a thing on Facebook. He said, JB, why don't you go to the supermarket and get you just one can of Vienna sausage? You deserve it.
Mm. Well, you know, they're an important source of omega-3 oils, too, JB.
Yeah, that keeps me well lubricated.
Yeah, exactly. All right, there's two events on our list that we haven't covered.
I wanted to say something about Diane, if I can.
This is going to be good. I get the idea that we're about to get in trouble, but go ahead, JB. Go for it.
Buckle up.
No, this is good. Diane should know Mobile real good because she won the Junior Miss National Contest on there one year.
Hey, JB, is Diane on your polygamous list?
she is halfway on it.
Show title. Either the question or the answer, either one.
I'm still going after Hillary.
She's got a lot more free time now.
All right.
Actually, we can't make too much fun of Hillary. She's actually in the hospital tonight with a blood clot.
So. Yeah, I saw that. That's not good.
She comes out of that okay. That's,
yeah. You might want to send your GM a note, James. He's going to get a call tomorrow.
Yes, right. Be looking for a new job. All right, Bill, but what are we not talked about in 2012 here?
Well, we didn't talk about the classic tornado outbreak on April 14th in the Plains, the one that caused that tornado that went across Wichita, Kansas, and killed some folks in Woodward, Oklahoma late that night. So that's showing up on the list pretty strongly about midway, two-thirds of the way down the list.
Hey, refresh me on the leap day, 44 tornadoes that killed 15. What states were affected by that?
Missouri up through Illinois, Branson, Missouri got hit. And, one of our guests that we had, the lady Ginger Brook over that wrote the book about the 1932 tornado or the 1925 tornado, the tri-state tornado, actually was in a hotel in Branson that night when that tornado went through. So,
and one in southern Illinois that same day.
Yeah, that's right, JB. There was an EF4 at Harrisonburg, Illinois also, and three people died in Tennessee, and Harveyville, Kansas, early in the outbreak was there. But I think there were... something like 28 tornadoes and 13 fatalities or something like that. So, and it happened on leap day, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm. And this Gainesville, Florida interstate smoke fire event that, I remember that, but I didn't know that it killed 11 people. That's very significant.
Yeah, that's one of the real sleeper events of the year, because down there on I-75, they had a brush fire, and on a foggy early morning, this stuff blew across the interstate, and the interstate had been closed for a while, but the state troopers had reopened it. And when they did, the wind changed and it blew back across the interstate and stopped the, stopped the visibility. And they had a huge chain reaction collision. And that's a scary event. We were down there, not far before that. And, early in the morning down there, you get some fog, you throw some, some smoke in there, you can have a mess pretty quickly.
That's one thing we overlook sometimes is those pileups, those multiple car pileups, not only on the snow and ice, but in the dust storms.
That's right, JB. But I think that pretty much covers the list, James.
You want to go to
Pocono? Pocono Raceway lightning death. I thought that was a pretty significant one. And moving forward, this discussion about severe weather and large venues. We had the gentleman who was struck outside the raceway there in Pennsylvania, and I thought that was an important event. It occurred on August the 5th.
Okay, cool. Well, what you want to show the list now? You want to officially unveil how our listeners have...
James, I cannot still screen share for some reason.
Okay.
I went out a minute ago.
We should do it on the next show because people will be listening through the week.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we will unveil the results of the survey on next week's show. And one of the things we should just mention here is just some thoughts on 2013. Obviously, it's all we can do to figure out the weather 24 hours in advance, much less, a year in advance. But does anybody on the panel here have any thoughts on what might happen in 2013? JB, you're a long-range guy. What do you think?
Below normal hurricanes.
Oh, for what reason?
Just a wild guess.
Okay, wild guess.
I don't really know, but yeah.
I don't know. I think the pattern eventually is going to have to break. I mean, we've had a dramatically quiet spell, especially when it. I mean, it's been a very busy year in terms of the numbers of hurricanes. But I think our streak of no Cat 3, I think that ends next year. My gut tells me we get hit, and I wouldn't be surprised to have multiple. And I have nothing to base that on. It's just that gut feeling that our luck is running out.
But don't y'all know, do you remember how it felt after, you know, Katrina and all the terrible things of 2005? And, you know, you look forward and you thought, we're going to continue to have these things. And we've been so lucky, as Nate just said, for 7 years. We haven't had a major hurricane hit the U.S. And I don't want to jinx us, but that's been a welcome respite after that horrible year of 2005.
And as bad as Isaac was for folks in the Gulf Coast, and Sandy was for New Jersey and New York, and, you know, like James said, that would have been a Category 1 hurricane barely when it made landfall had it not gone post-tropical. Still waiting for the reanalysis on that one. But, you know, at that point, and that's the damage that does. That ought to be a huge wake-up call to anybody along the coast. And you got to think about how many people move into these areas that haven't seen a hurricane. I mean, how many people have moved to Miami since the last major hurricane to run through there? How many people have moved to the upper coast of Florida? How many people have moved to the Carolina, for that matter? I mean, you know, how many people have moved there and have no idea, other than having seen it on TV, how many people have no idea what that really does to your life to come and have a hurricane come through? I mean, it is a life-changing experience. Even if you survive and whatnot, your community is destroyed. Everything you know about, you know, where you live is completely turned upside down. And I would hope that anybody who's listening to this program and has moved into an area that you're not familiar with, whether it's the coast, whether it's the plains, spend a few minutes, get to know the kinds of bad weather that happened in that area, and figure out, make the plan now. Now's the time to think about this stuff, not 24 hours before it hits.
You know what I would add to that, Nate, because you bring up some really interesting points, but one of the things I've observed, especially in the wake of Sandy, is something for people to remember is, in spite of the amazing job that all first responders do, and electricity crews, and Red Cross, and all of those organizations, in a very, very large event, there are some high odds that at some level, the government or that infrastructure is not going to be able to service you, at least immediately, as you might like. And I think that's something important for broadcasters and information disseminators to remember, is that you shouldn't necessarily expect that whatever organization will eventually come and help you is going to be there on your doorstep right after. Because in a large event like that, it's just not possible. And I think that's important to remember.
And I think they saw that in New York City as Sandy was making landfall, you know, thousands of 911 calls, and there was just no hope. But
right. You know, and all those people in New Jersey, you know, who just went weeks and weeks without electricity and so on and so forth.
And this means no disrespect to the police, the fire, the EMS, all the folks, the crews that get there. But in a lot of situations, the first responders are you. It's your neighbor. You're the person that shows up, that, you know, you come out of the house and people are sort of stunned after it and people need help. And it's going to take time for the police and the fire folks to get there. You have to be able to help people. And it may be that your neighbor has to help you. And so we really need to be thinking about, you know, not only how can I live for 72 hours without any sort of outside assistance, water, phone, electricity, all that kind of stuff, and have your kit ready, but also, you know, take the time maybe to go take a first aid class or learn CPR, or, you know, stuff like that, so that you can help out in the event. You know, there's so many stories of, you know, people having car accidents or having things happen. And if it hadn't have been for this person who just showed up and just knew exactly what to do, I mean, how many stories, you know, get played on the local news that somebody was at the right place at the right time to be able to offer life-saving help to somebody. Those people don't just don't just happen. They go through training. They learn. They figure this stuff out. And you can do that. Your local Red Cross can point you in the right direction. And maybe if you're looking for resolutions, that'd be a pretty good one.
All right, hey, guys, what about the winter? You know, winter is just a week old here, and already I'm seeing a lot of buzz about warming of the stratosphere and analogs to the great frigid winters of 78, 79. You know, Joe Bastardi, he is indicating that he believes January into February will be brutal. What do you guys think?
Well, and my boss, one of my coworkers, Greg Fischel, has been interacting or trying to interact with Joe. It hasn't been getting a whole lot of reply, but it's going to get cold. It's going to get cold. It's going to get cold. And here in North Carolina, we're still waiting. We've barely been below normal a few days for the last little bit. And not that I'm wishing for a 20-inch snowstorm, but at the same time.
Yeah, now would be the time to hold up one of your Texas waffles because it's cold here.
Yeah. Hold on, I think it's probably cool down. Hold on a second.
Hey, JB, what do you got there? You got a map you want to show us there?
This is today's snow cover chart.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. 60-something percent.
Can you see it?
Put it in front of your camera there, JB.
Where is my camera?
It is a little spot on your iMac that you can't see.
You had it right, JB. It just needs to be higher.
Yeah, Kevin's going to his head
closer
is going
to
blow
you.
Up.
Back up, higher.
Higher.
Right there.
There we go.
Down just a notch. Down just a hair.
I figure about 60% coverage, and this is the North American coverage, and you can see how far over the North Pole and down into Europe that the snow is piled up on, and I fear that we're going to have some of those cross-polar cold waves at some point during the winter.
Hey, Bill, you're complaining that screen share wasn't working. I think he's got you there.
Yeah. Well, so I need analog screens here.
Yes. Oh, whoa. Wait a minute. This is good. Look at Nate.
Yep, there's the Texas shaped waffle, and Abilene is about here, so that's good.
For those that are listening to the audio show here, Nate is actually holding up a Texas waffle. We thought he was kidding.
That's a wildfire forecast.
And here's you're asking for the waffle iron, so here it is. And it's sort of hard to see in the lighting, but it is.
That looks good. Yeah. Wow.
You're supposed to hold it by El Paso.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to eat El Paso here, so.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, but anyway, there's the basin, for those watching, there's a look at the actual snow cover from the NOAA site, and we do have a pretty nice snow cover. Our friends in Arkansas and Kentucky and parts of southern Illinois, Indiana, they've been hammered by a series of snowstorms. So
Arkansas
JB,
had a white Christmas. What's up with that?
They did. I mean, while we have tornadoes down here in my market, they had a wonderful snow. In fact, that's a big story. I mean, they had at one point, I think, 175,000 people with no power after that. And some, I think, are still without power today. And this is the 30th, 5 days later. So that was a big deal.
We had a great Christmas day because we woke up to start doing Christmas presents, and we had a hailstorm. We had pea-size and BB-size hail covering the ground at around 7 o'clock.
That's a Texas white Christmas.
And that's what we had, double white Christmas. We had hail in the morning, and then we had close to 2 inches of snow by late afternoon.
But anyway, let me get back to JB's point now. So, JB, you're thinking that this winter could feature some big-time cold waves, huh?
Yes, sir.
Is it the larger snowpack we have, or upper air pattern, stratospheric warming? What's your thinking there?
Some of all that, but right now the snowpack. But one thing that's a little bit disturbing, Alaska has warmed up the last 3 or 4 days. They did have some temperatures 54 below zero earlier, but most of the lows up right now are minus 30 up to about minus 40, and some of the snow has melted off.
Okay, so you're saying the air has left the station, huh?
Yeah, part of it. The Yukon, though, is still very cold, and that air mass has not left yet.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what here. Let's take a break, and we're going to hit Weather Brains 101. We have This Week in Weather History. We'll come back with the weather roundup. We have the email inbox. We have the picks of the week and much more as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
As we near the end of 2012, meteorologists are dealing with some rather strong troughs bringing significant weather systems to the U.S. In forecast discussions, you will occasionally come across the terms positive, neutrally, and negatively tilted troughs. So just what does this mean? First off, when a trough is positive or neutrally tilted, it is usually not referenced as such. So instead, you just see it referenced as a trough. But when it goes negatively tilted, you usually see it referenced as such. The tilt of a trough is the angle the trough axis makes with lines of longitude. A negatively tilted trough tilts horizontally, parallel to the surface, from the northwest to the southeast. So what is the big deal about having a negative tilt to a trough and pointing it out in a forecast discussion? A negatively tilted trough usually points to several important characteristics about what is happening in the weather. A negatively tilted trough generally indicates a low-pressure system that has reached maturity. It also indicates strong differential advection, or middle and upper-level cool air advecting over low-level warm advection. This characteristic amplifies thermodynamic instability, and a negative tilt to the trough also means good vertical wind shear. The combination of a deep low-pressure system at the surface, a negatively tilted trough aloft, and a warm, moist, warm sector east of the Rockies often produces a severe weather outbreak. So what leads to the negative tilt of the trough? Well, there are a number of factors, but perhaps the leading elements are strong middle and upper level winds wrapping around the base of the trough, a strong jet near the base of the trough, a ridge to the east of the trough, and the occlusion of the low pressure system. So the next time you see the model projections showing a negatively tilted trough, or note the term in a forecast discussion, you can be fairly certain that a strong to intense storm system will be the result.
Let's look back at some drought-busting rains in Alabama that occurred during This Week in Weather History. At the end of January 2008, more than half of Alabama was in D4 extreme drought conditions, which is, of course, the highest of the five stages of drought on the National Drought Monitor. Now, drier than normal conditions were reported in January, February, and March in Birmingham, at least in the rainfall department. But by the end of March, none of Alabama was still in that extreme drought department. 50% of the northern half of the state, though, was still in the D3, which is exceptional drought category. Now, April rains were good, May was even better, and when June and July were exactly on normal, things were looking up. By the end of July, all of the exceptional drought was gone, and although there was still severe drought conditions covering 70% of the northern half of the state, the situation was improving. Then came Fay. The wandering tropical storm meandered across the southeast for several days, bringing over 7 inches of rain in 4 days between the 23rd and 26th. After Fay's beneficial rains had fallen, only the Tennessee Valley counties were still in drought at all, and they were only rated as D1, which is moderate drought. Much of the rest of the northern half of the state was abnormally dry in the long run, but Fay had really eased the situation. And several steps forward were followed by a few steps backward. Birmingham recorded one of its driest Septembers on record. October was below normal, and so was November. So by the end of November, moderate drought was creeping back down the I-59 corridor, while the rest of the north and central part of Alabama was abnormally dry. Now, December featured above normal rainfall. Nearly 4 inches fell on the 10th and 11th in Birmingham, and this did a lot to kill the drought, but a persistent southwest flow aloft right after New Year's set the stage for the final nails in the drought's coffin. Over 4 inches of rain fell in Birmingham between the 2nd and the 6th. Significant flooding occurred on the 5th and the 6th as 7 inches of rain fell in 24 hours over parts of Etowah County northeast of Birmingham. A small tornado did damage around Quintard Mall in Oxford just after sunset. And severe weather, though, was not as big of a problem as the flooding was. Roads were washed out in several counties, including Blount and Lamar, but overall, people were quite relieved that the drought was finally coming to an end. That's a look back at some welcome rainfall that occurred in Alabama during This Week in Weather History. Follow my weather history tweets on Twitter. I am WXHistorian at Twitter.com.
All right, time now for the weather roundup as we wrap up the year 2012. J.B. Elliott takes a look at what's happening across the vast fruited plain.
Okay, don't ask me what I had for lunch because I'm ashamed of it.
But what, what did you have for lunch?
Oh, no. We have a rule in our house that we are on a diet most of the year and try to watch what we eat. But in the five-day period after Christmas Day till New Year's, we can gorge all we want to. So today, for breakfast, I had... Excuse me. I had several slices of ham, two helpings of potato salad, three Pop-Tarts, two pieces of pecan pie, some potato chips, and several helpings of M&Ms and some diet ginger ale. The
a balanced diet.
The coldest...
Go, JB.
You're messing JB up, James.
Yeah, I'm sorry, JB. Go ahead. I when I hear something riveting, I ring my bell. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought that was me. By the way, on the Diane Sawyer News, I like David Coor much better. Isn't that his last name?
David who?
Somebody. That,
Coors?
The one that substitutes.
See, a beer guy? David,
No. The guy that, he's a real tall guy that substitutes for her a lot of times when she's not there. David Moore or Coor or something
David
like
Muir.
That. Muir, yeah.
Yeah.
He does a super job. When I win the Publisher's Clearinghouse, which I haven't entered, I'm going to lure him away and buy me a TV station and let him be the news director. And
do we have the nerve to tell JB, JB they haven't done the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstake in about 10 years? I think it died 10 years ago, JB.
Yeah, but I'm still getting notices I'm entered in it.
Okay, good. Go. Everybody's a winner.
Okay. 85 yesterday at Miami and Vero Beach was the hottest in the country, warmest in the country. The lowest this morning was 22 below zero at Kremlin, Colorado. In Alaska, the low was 34 below at Umatat, and that's relatively mild as compared to some of the low temperatures recently. And it was, let's see, showers over Southern California to Northern Louisiana, mostly light this afternoon and evening, but more so in North Carolina and Northeast Texas. Some snow showers around Flagstaff, but not very many, and also around Grand Junction, Colorado. The northern tip of Montana had a few small snow showers, but by the way, this last... big storm, which has been named something, dumped 20 inches of snow in the northeast edge of Maine. 20 inches in just 24 hours. And so I was bringing up the question again, why not name some other weather phenomena, but I don't want to get back into that again. But
neither do we.
Yeah, really.
I'm sick of it. I'm going to go take some Pepto-Bismol when we get through.
All right, well, if JB's sick and tired of it, then we're going to bring on the email segment because it's full.
Letters. We get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
Oh, I guess I have to work now. Yeah. So it's been a while since we've done email. I wasn't able to make it last week. So let's dig through. We have four Weather Brains listener survey responses. We love getting these. People tell us how they listen and what you think. One of them is from Mary in rural Kansas, 30 miles southwest of Wichita. And we appreciate the folks at KNSW and Mike Smith for pointing them in the general direction of our fine little program here. Also have another one from Ryan Mark. Some guy named James Spann. Woo! I refer him to the blog. I'm not, or to the program. I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah.
Additional thoughts, comments. The audio-only version has James's audio out of sync with the others. So
it's producer's fault, not mine.
No, that's not it.
Yeah, throw him under the bus, man. That's just wrong.
It says James is often responding to a guest answer before the guest has answered. That's just because he's omniscient. You know, all these other things on Twitter you hear about James.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
He knows what they're going to say before they say it.
Right.
Got another one from Nick.
Hey, Nate, the funniest one yesterday in Twitter, I saw this because, you know, I watched these spam tweets come across, and it said, you know, this guy wrote, he said, I landed in Birmingham 2 hours ago, and I've been driving around for the last 2 hours looking for the statue to span.
It's in the bathroom of a truck stop off I-65. You have to look very carefully in there.
Love it. All right. Another one from Nick in Beardstown, Illinois. We appreciate your listening to the our little program here. And then Adam in Rigby, Idaho. I love this. We're reaching west now, and we appreciate he doesn't mention the name, but mentions that his local ABC weatherman posted a link to the show on Facebook. So we appreciate whoever that is. I'm not sure who that is.
Brian Newdorf, probably.
Maybe. So we appreciate you posting the link to the program, and of course appreciate your listening. All right, let's get on to some of the other email. Richard Meister sent us a looks like to be a promotional piece, something about tornado dampeners. They're double flange channel frame style backdraft dampers. Somebody hopefully knows what that is. I sure don't. Designed to protect against tornadoes and rapid pressure changes. So they're installed in ductwork, wall mounted, blah, 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 blah. I got to figure that that probably goes under the category of things that won't really matter if the tornado is close enough to make that worth a thing. You know, it's like I used to tell you that you're... I remember when I was in elementary school, and that was back when I had more hair than I do now. And but James still didn't have any hair back then.
No, and, none.
And we you know, part of the tornado warning protocol, the kids would go into the hall, and we'd duck and do the you know the duck and cover bit. And part of what the teachers had to do was go to the southwest corner of the building and open windows. So, and of course, that's they tell you not to do that anymore because, but it was supposed to equalize the pressure and keep the building from whatever. And the thing now is that if the tornado is close enough to make the pressure change, the building's going to be trashed by debris. But in any event, Mary from this is a person who sent us a note from Kansas. One of the listener surveys also sent a note. Since I discovered you chuckleheads just this last February. She's been wading through the archives, and she reviewed the Christmas episode from last year, Lost in the Yucatan. And she was intrigued by today's parallels, and she lists a couple of parallels between that year and this year. And I'll hit a couple of these. There was an extreme Five Below in Wyoming and 83 in Kingsville. And she picked a couple of extremes. There was a major winter storm in the nation's midsection. Yeah, there was. Back then, there was a slight risk of severe weather in the southeast U.S. And, of course, there was the damage in Alabama and Mississippi. Blizzard conditions over western Kansas and another big multi-billion dollar disaster year. So some interesting parallels there. Let's see. We've got a link to some video from Tim about thunder snow. Nothing like a little thunder snow video. Our buddy Tarmo Tanelsu, he sent us that audio clip the one time. I need you, Tarmo, I need you to just record these and send them to us. And that way I will never butcher your name again. I feel so bad because
you
you're
sent a pronouncer earlier today.
I know. And I'm awful. I know.
I couldn't either. That's why I gave up the email job.
In Estonia, talked about his weather highlight of the year being that he saw a tornado, a non-supercell tornado or a landspout that was on July 20th at 3 o'clock local time. And then he mentions this, having heard your show you're about to post on Monday, your stats are a bit off. So this is referring to last week. Your first show was on January 31st, 2006. That would be 7 years. Hard not to forget since I've listened to all WeatherBrains episodes made before I recently started listening regularly in 09, 010. Mm-hmm. By the way, the status of the Great Catch-Up started listening from 2000. He started listening to all the old shows back in from 2000 in the autumn of 2011, and he's now approaching late 2011. So only a year to go. And we really, really need to get you something better to do with your time. And I love this. Every now and again, we'll get an email from somebody who said that they've listened to every show or they're going through every show. And we really need to get you guys something better to do. Another email from actually a listener survey response I missed the first time around. George from Elgin or Elgin. I think it's Elgin with a hard G, South Carolina. I should know that. That's like next door. Mentioned, by the way, that he wouldn't mind having a climate podcast so long as it is not a Al Gore climate change love fest.
That ship sailed a long time ago.
And he found the show by searching for weather-related podcasts on Podcatcher and then remembered that we got mentioned on TWIT this week in technology. So we appreciate the mention there from Leo and his group. And then finally, from our friend in the National Park Service, Alan, and he says that he's a self-professed weather geek, loves the show, typically listens two or three at a time. And he sent us a couple of interesting potential guests. Bill, I hope you saw these. And both of these are out west. So in sort of honor of our Idaho listener, we appreciate that. And certainly send us those lists. If you have any guest suggestions or any other suggestions, you can hit us up. Go to weatherbrains.com. There are email addresses for all of us, links, everything. All the links we mentioned on the show. You can fill out a listener survey response, or you can just email us and tell us that we're awful. Don't worry. You won't hurt our feelings. We already know.
Yeah, we know how bad this show is.
The Weather Channel is now.
Yeah, we're here. We know.
Yeah, go ahead, JB.
By the way, the weather channel is now calling the winter storm Athena. Athena, I guess.
That was the A
Wait,
storm.
I thought they
That's
used
old.
That one.
They're in like the F storm by now.
How do you pronounce this F one? I don't know.
Yeah. Fred,
the
Fred,
storm or something. The new F word.
And also doing a storm story about Hurricane Katrina.
That's good. All right. Well, I tell you what, let's do this, guys, that we don't have Skydiver. This is where we do the picks of the week. We go around the horn and share a pick. And since the producer is on vacation and Brian is out, I guess I'll be doing the webpage, which means it will be a total disaster. So, but I will get these on weatherbrains.com when the show is posted this week. Let me just start with my pick. A lot of you are aware that Google has their social network up and running called Google Plus. Obviously, it's not as populated as Facebook or Twitter, but it's a very dynamic and a really nice platform. And one of the new features that they unveiled are Google Plus communities. And I started a Weather Brains community on Google Plus, and that will be my pick of the week. We have a nice community on Facebook. Mike Wilhelm has been keeping up with that and does a great job. But if you are a Google Plusser, be sure and check out the Weather Brains community that was just launched here a day or two ago. So that is my pick. And let's go to the world's greatest weatherman, JB Elliott, and see if JB has a pick for us this week.
Dan Satterfield just entered on Facebook that he could not believe that a major cable network would actually forecast for inauguration today, which is 22 days away. And I have a...
Wait. Which cable channel is this?
He didn't say.
He didn't say. But I have one trivia question when we get through here. I do not have a pick of the week. I sure don't.
Wow. I have not heard that sound in a while. So JB gets the foghorn. So what's your trivia question? Go ahead.
Okay. Can any of you guys name a town and a weather station, including the three-letter station code, that will immediately remind you of a motor vehicle?
What do we win if we get this right?
Read the question again.
I got a half a banana left. You can have that.
repeat it one more time for Kevin, JB.
A three-letter ID for the town and the weather station that will immediately remind you of a motor vehicle.
GMC.
I'm trying to think. Dodge Dart. That's more than three letters. I don't know. GMC, is that the right one?
No.
Not BMW.
Caribou, Maine. KCAR. Oh.
Yeah, that's a good one.
No, sir. It's TRK, Truckee, California, on the west slopes of the Sierra Nevada.
I've been there.
They get tons of snow every winter.
Lucky All right. dogs.
Okay, good deal. Thanks, JB. Let's see if Kevin Selly has a pick of the week.
I do have a pick of the week. It's not weather-related necessarily, but it is it's for the broadcasters and the audience. It's the final post from Terry Heaton as somebody who is working for AR&D. His time with AR&D ended at the end of the year.
Now, explain what AR&D is for those that don't know.
AR&D, Audience Research and Development, back in the heyday of television news, especially in the 80s and I guess early 90s, AR&D and Frank Magid were the two behemoth consulting firms for
consultant
television
news. Goobs is what we call them. Yes,
exactly. And They have downsized most of those organizations and gone on to some other things. But Terry worked for them for a number of years, and he's now moving on to other things. He's actually going to start his own company, Reinvent 21, I think is the website. There's nothing there yet other than a splash page, but I would expect good things from Terry in 2013. But his final post is good for broadcasters. It's called Following Big Trends, and the previous post is good as well. So those are my official picks. A recommendation, my family banded together and got me a Nexus 7 for Christmas, mm-hmm. and I quite love it. I'm really interested in the difference in the weather apps. I have all the iOS weather apps because I have an iPad and I have an iPhone, and there are, you know, quite a number of them. But I'm really struck by the difference between the Android apps, even from the same vendors, and the iOS ones. In most cases, I find the Android apps to be worse, quite frankly, than the iOS ones. And so it's kind of interesting space, but it's fun to I like the size, I like the functionality, I like being able to carry it around. So Nexus 7 is definitely a recommendation.
And this is the one that's like between the size of an iPhone and an iPad mini, right?
Yeah, it's a 7-inch tablet. It's a little smaller than the mini. They start at $200 for
I have
six,
one too, Kevin.
Do you? Yeah.
Fantastic size.
Yeah, the size is really nice. $200 for, I think, a 16 gig and $250 for 32 gig. But it's nice to play in the Android space. I really think that in many, 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 many ways, they have reached parity with iOS on a number of things, and they seem to iterate a little faster. So I think it's well worth a look. I want to do a foghorn, though, a double foghorn, James.
A double foghorn?
Double foghorn.
Wow.
I won't mention any names, but there are two people in particular that I saw go by on the Broadcast Meteorologist group on Facebook who, based on some random, I don't know, quota, either self-imposed or I think in one case in a fairly large market imposed by the station overlords, these people were going up begging for Twitter followers from the Broadcast Meteorology group on Facebook, saying, we have to get to a certain number by the end of the year. Please come and follow our Twitter account, and of course, we'll follow you back. And to me,
what?
I say foghorn for that.
What?
Because that's just not, I know.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Forget
whoa.
That. We need a buzzer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Come on now. I mean, wait, so
I'm just saying.
You're saying that some station managers, that they've got like a quota of Twitter followers that the weather people have to have by the end of the year?
I can't say that exactly. In one case, somebody said, got on there and said, and again, this is a closed group of broadcast meteorologists on Facebook. And so the only people they're talking to are other broadcast meteorologists. But the way the comment was worded was, look, we've got an imposed deadline by somebody other than us to get an additional 500 followers by the end of the year. So please come follow us and we'll on our main station account and we'll follow you back. And I saw others of the same ilk, and some of these may be self-imposed, but I think that one in particular was imposed by the station, which I thought was bad.
All right, so I'm screen sharing that closed group, and I better not do that for long because I better kill that.
I'll
get in big trouble. All right.
And then the last thing I have is to add.
We should probably note that Kevin is not ragging on the people asking. It is the overlords who are dictating quantity over quality.
Some goobs in the big office that don't get it.
Well, but in some cases, I think it was perhaps the individuals. In each case, I don't know for sure, but I just thought, you know, I mean, that's just jacking up the numbers with a group that really doesn't matter because they're all in the, you know, they're all in the same boat. It's all a bunch of broadcasters. So I just thought that was kind of worth mentioning. And lastly, I want to add to the top stories of the year, and it was James coming out about 2 weeks ago saying that Facebook was no good for weather information dissemination.
Oh, there we go. Yep. All right. It's not. Period. It's a problem. Facebook is not a good platform for severe weather dissemination. Period. That's all I got to say about that. All right, Nate, the floor is yours.
My pick was actually I had the opportunity to sit on a panel of five local scientists at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences and talk about the year in science 2012. And we had a record. I don't know. It seemed like a record number of folks show up for this. They do a weekly science cafe at this museum. It's a really top notch museum, and really honored to be asked to be a part of their panel. And in some of the follow up discussion amongst some of the panelists, David Kroll, who is at David Kroll on Twitter, sent me a note about an article in the New York Times that I had missed, and it's titled "A Record Worth Wilting For: Death Valley is Hotter Than ... And it goes into some detail and actually links to an article that will be published in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society in 2013 about how the record high temperature in Libya that we all thought that El Azizia or whatever how you pronounce it in Libya was the hottest place on earth, and how they went through and they painstakingly worked through all of the details and figured out that no, that number was bogus, and the hottest place on earth really is James's house. I'm just kidding. It's Death Valley, California. So
JB drove through there in 1963 in his Dodge station wagon and talked to the Observer that
and that Dodge Dart.
Yeah. So it is a really interesting read if you're into. I know Bill, you'll appreciate it if you haven't already seen it, and a really good read if you're into that sort of thing, into records. I found it fascinating. It goes through. I mean, there are a lot of different things that played into that, including that it took them almost a year once the initial concern was raised, because one of the people in Libya they needed to talk to had turned up missing due to the revolution that was ongoing in the country at that time. Thankfully, he was found, and they were able to talk to him and figure that out. Obviously, I'm thankful that he was found for more than just being able to talk to him. But a really interesting, fascinating story, and I hope you'll check it out.
Okay, cool. Bill Murray, what's your pick of the week?
Yeah, my pick is a future pick, James. Can I do that? Can I project a pick into the future?
Okay.
It'll be the post I'll put up tomorrow of all the events as our listeners and the panel rated them this year. The top 12 weather events of 2012. I'm updating the statistics here. Superstorm Sandy is the far and away leader now, and followed closely by the March 2nd tornado outbreak in second place. Looks like Kevin Kelleher next week, but I won't be here because that's going to be on Monday night during the national championship. And I think Nate's got Bob Barron on the 14th, and I'm looking forward to that.
Well, we cannot record the Weather Brains during the game, can we?
We can, but order will be restored to the world because truly no one will be watching.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to like the Weather Channel again. They are now doing a storm story on those North Texas tornadoes last year when those 18-wheelers were going sky high and falling back down to the ground.
Gives Kevin flashbacks.
Yeah. And also Hurricane Katrina. Boy, Katrina looked rough.
Hey, all James.
Right. Yes.
Just one more pick, just because I saw it combined. It dovetails with yours. Alex Lindsay, you know, from Leo's orbit, posted or reshared something on Google Plus from Guy Kawasaki. It's a new book that he has out. It's about 175 pages, it looks like, and it's free online if you go to Guy Kawasaki on Google Plus. But it's called What the Plus, Google Plus for the Rest of Us. And some of the chapters, Why I Love Google Plus, How to Get Started, How to Master Circles and Streams, How to Make an Enchanting Profile, and so on and so forth. There's 15 different chapters that don't look particularly long each one. So Guy Kawasaki on Google Plus.
I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like Google Plus has been more active in the last few weeks. Maybe it's just my imagination, but it seems like good things are happening there. You know, we were just bragging. We were bragging on Google Plus, and Google Plus just went away. Yeah, that's the way it works. But in terms of the logistics, we're going to try and get back on schedule next week. So on January,
so you're going to do a game during the national championship. You're going to do a show.
I guess I'll poll everybody and see if they want to do it that way. We might postpone it until Tuesday. I guess JB.
Easier for me to do it on Sunday than Tuesday.
Okay.
Just if I'm talking.
Okay.
Let's do it tonight and get it out of the way.
We can just chop this one up into two versions and send it out that way. But let's just do the whole
year.
Hey, we need to get your kid back on, James. That's who we need to have on. I was anxious to hear him.
Yeah, you know, we had scheduled a 14-year-old young man from San Diego. Chad Crilly to be on the show, and he had circled us up, and he had a very interesting story to tell about flying to Joplin, Missouri on the morning of May 22nd. And he was actually
to do an internship,
and he was actually there when the tornado came through. And very interesting stuff. So we're going to see if we can get him back on for next week. But boy, who's making all that racket?
Notice, James, when he's going to come to Birmingham, because he's going to come shadow you at some point. If you let him do that, we want 2 weeks' notice so we can move to another state. When that happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what here. Since I think Kevin's over there. He's got cats. This is great. For those that are not watching, we have a cat that's messing around with Kevin. What's his cat's name?
This is Penny. She just came in to visit me, and she's very squirmy right now.
I gotta love this. Yeah, this is officially... Weatherbrains has officially jumped the cat.
Here's the face behind, and I shouldn't do this, of course, because it's a face, but here's the face behind all the audio. This is my son, Matthew, and he wants to wish everybody a Happy New Year. Say Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, Matthew. All right.
Hey, Matthew. Hey, can he hear us?
No, he wants to hear. He's going to talk to you.
All right. Matthew, let's see. Where do you go to school?
Grace Prep.
Okay. How are the lunches? Are they good or bad in the lunchroom there?
I bring my own.
That speaks volumes. That speaks volumes. You see, if I'm ever out there and invited to your school, I'd like to know about the lunches. Are the teachers nice or mean?
Pretty nice, yeah.
Pretty nice. And one more question. Did you receive anything for Christmas that was really exciting this year? Something that was just fantastic?
Yes, I got a bunch of Skylanders, which are add-ons to a video game.
This is for the Wii.
Really fun.
Wee. Okie doke. Well, Matthew, it's an honor to have you on the show here. And looking at the old... now, I say that... You know, I don't have a news. I could stay here. We could sit up here all night and talk about weather. But
have you done your radio already, Tim?
No, I got a little radio to do. So I got a few chores. But other than that, no TV tonight because it's Sunday night. But since we've been on the air for more than 90 minutes, let's wrap this thing up. Weather Brains is the weekly show all about weather. We typically do the show Monday nights at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. You can watch this live if you'd like at live.bigbrainsmedia.com. And there is a YouTube version, the video version, if you'd like to watch. But we know most of you just listen, and thank you for listening. If you would like to get in touch with us, the email address, it's email@weatherbrains.com. Our Facebook accounts, the Twitter accounts are up on the website, the links, everything else, the show notes, it's right there. So on behalf of the entire Weather Brains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week. Have a happy new year. And God bless.
I'm hungry. I gotta go eat lunch.